We are Dr. Fred Bell, Health Science and Energy Show, coming online. I'm warming up my spaceship. Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, live from Laguna Beach. Thank you once again, my Florida listeners. You know, Pantalk1340am.com, above and below the ground. These guys underground listening are pretty cool. So tonight's show, we're going to talk about the hologram and cosmology, if you can believe that. You know what that means? That's like you go get some makeup put on and think about the universe. That's what I think of this cosmology field. And, of course, we're going to have the fast chat open and running. And we're going to have phone lines open. But let's talk about cosmology and the hologram. Okay, first of all, there's a big buzz in the community about what's called string theory. Okay, and this will be in my new book, Inside Track, a little bit of information about string theory. And a lot of people are trying to take claim to string theory. But string theory goes back to Annie Besant and Charles Leadbetter back at the turn of the century in the late 1800s when they did remote viewing on atomic particles and came up with a bunch of atomic particles in hydrogen, our lightest atom, which equaled 18 subatomic particles, which then divided into oxygen gave oxygen its atomic weight. So therefore, string theory started about 100 years ago. And I love these guys that take on the mantle of being discoverers of string theory. Secondly, when you look at string theory, you know, first of all, people ask, how does that relate to cosmology? Cosmology being like the science of the universe, quantum theory, quantum mechanics, quantum physics, we can talk about that. If there's anybody out there that wants to, any cosmologist who wants to talk to me about that and your formulas, I'm open to it. I'm always open to it. But my point is that, you know, everybody looks at the Big Bang and the Planck energy. The Planck energy is a formula that describes how much energy occurs at the Big Bang. And so whenever the science gets, confused or worried, they always say, oh, Planck constant. It's a huge amount of energy. It's the amount of energy of all the universe, you know, all the universe compressed into something smaller than an atom and releasing itself. Boom. And then supposedly, 380,000 years after the Big Bang, X-rays and different kinds of radiation started to transmit itself around the Earth, around the universe. And, of course, science goes back 380,000 years and tries to make a connection to the mechanics of the Big Bang and the quantum radiation, which is quite interesting. So when you start understanding, you know, the quantum mechanics was, the theory was proposed in 1925, which replaced the old quantum theory of Planck and Einstein. And unlike the old quantum theory, which was a hybrid of old colossal concepts and newer quantum ideas, quantum mechanics based on wave equations, and we'll talk about wave equations because when we get into our holographic projectors, we're talking about with wave equations and uncertainty principles, and represents a significant break from classical physics. I realize that classical physics was Newton's laws. An object in motion tends to stay in motion. Something falls at the rate of the square of its speed per minute. Hits the ground. This kind of stuff. Kind of boring, but it's true. In its most advanced version today, the quantum field theory, which combines special relativity, equals mc squared, you know, proved by a, that was proven by a light shift, a measurable light bending ray around Jupiter back in the 1920s. And that's what made Einstein the superhero he was, which caused him to go into oblivion with Hollywood. Him and Charlie Chaplin went off on a big blitz, and he never came back, dumped his wife, and had a girlfriend. So these guys that are cosmologists, have huge egos. And a fully quantum mechanical theory of gravity, however, is exceedingly difficult because science tries to, you know, establish a particle called a gravitron, which is not, has never been seen, discovered, or whatever. Because when you don't understand consciousness in the equation, you don't understand quantum physics, you don't understand relativity. You know, E equals mc squared is a true formula, but it's not, you know, anything, mass times velocity times light, the speed of light squared equals the energy. And that works in three-dimensional physics, but when you get up into the fourth dimension, and by the way, the scientists are so strung out on dimensions, they don't realize there's only eight in a parallel, there's only eight parallel worlds, and infinite number of dimensions coming from eight. You look back in the quantum physics and the Planck constants, you'll see eight comes up a lot, as does four. But that's too advanced for, you know, cosmology at this point, because they want to keep the creator, God, and consciousness out of the formulas. And math gets very dry. Math is a hell of a lot of fun. I've done a lot of it. It's a lot of fun. You start looking at omega, the amount of energy, you know, the ratio of the energy expansion in the universe versus the mass. Start looking at the four basic principles of cosmology, which is basically nuclear forces and gravity. You start looking at all, and it's all cool, but it's not taking into feeling what I call dimension. And when you get into, one of the big things in cosmology is, well, any thought, any idea, you know, exists somewhere in time. It's old, it's been there already. And the idea is to not understand. They don't understand that any potential idea is already there. But people don't realize the idea has no power until you put your energy on it, and then it's empowered. So obviously, after the Big Bang, if that's where you think consciousness started, all of these things in quantum mechanics are possible. But what if we look at the Tibetan side of this, Prealeya and Manavantara, and we start looking at ages of Brahm, we start looking at millions and millions of years of manifestation, million and four stages, Treta Yuga, Kali Yuga, Dwarpa Yuga, etc. And then we start looking at non-existence, which is called Prealeya. Now, the Pleiadians brought the Pleiadian science to the Brahmins 26,000 years ago. And I think back then to the Tibetans, the Brahms, at the time, I think that a science that came back here 26,000 years ago and landed in Tibet, high place at the time, would make a heck of a lot more sense than some, you know, young Einstein, which is great. He was a great guy, very smart. You know, his intellect can go 10 to the infinite power as it has in a lot of our brilliant scientists. Einstein's theories describe event horizons, wormholes, black holes, light bending, expansion of the universe, which is speeding up more as we speak. Explains all of that based on observed data. Now, he was a theorist on bending light waves with gravity around event horizons. That was brilliant. The guy was brilliant. He was a Jewish guy. You know, he's the same heritage as I have. A brilliant, brilliant guy. But Einstein lived back about 50 years ago. Today's time got to let his theory of relativity and his unfinished unified field theory go. We need to let all that go now. We got to come in. I mean, you don't have to do anything, but I've let it go. In my book, Rays of Truth, I worked on the relativity theory. But then what I realized when I worked on it, when I was going to present it to the field of cosmology, I realized that there's like a presentation every 5 minutes. It's like lining up at the patent office. There's a presentation every 5 minutes, you know, to update the unified field theory by up-and-coming young astronomers, young, you know, cosmologists. And God bless them. Let them work on it. I mean, that's their field. So I backed off big time from that years ago. But I was able to create things that have been verified in the laboratory. You know, if you take an electron and an atom, and you spin one direction, and you take another atom and spin it in the other direction, which you can do now in a laboratory, and then you separate the two spins to a great distance and reverse one of the spins, the other one will automatically reverse. This has been done in the laboratory. It's part of new quantum mechanics. Then if you shoot a laser into that, you come up with a whole new energy field called quantum computer. And that's where the computers are going right now. With this new laser computer technology that's coming out, all the NSA codes, all the codes around the world, which would take forever in a binary, bits and ones, boom, to crack, can be done in microseconds. So we're coming on to the quantum computers now. There's articles out on it. And that's just apropos to what we're doing with the the Andromedan technology, which we had 20 years ago. So it's always funny. I always laugh when I hear all this stuff in quantum mechanics and these great breakthroughs, you know, like the Big Hadron Collider being well over in Europe right now. I got 29 miles to crash two protons together to get a result. It's ridiculous. It's what the Hadron Collider is. 29 miles of buildings, it actually crosses a couple of countries' lines, to get two opposing fields going to crash protons, which are accelerated. A Hadron Collider works a lot like a linear accelerator or like a cyclotron. And then it has, in the old days we used to use magnetrons. So if you take a particle beam, in this case protons, which remember it's a proton, is 1,645 times heavier than an electron, and it's a positive charge, and we push it down a tube, just as it passes a point on the tube, we put a positive charge on that on it from a coil and pushes it harder. Then we move it another inch and we put a positive charge on it and move it again. So this accelerates the mass. We used to use klystron oscillators in the old days to do this. Today they're using much faster, superconducting magnets that have a much higher switching speed to make these particles move a lot. But at the end of the day, when these things get up to the speed of light and they've got enough mass, because they're accumulating a heck of a lot of mass through velocity equals mc squared, over a 29-mile path, that little old proton is pretty heavy dude. And so we have another one going in the opposite direction, and we just deflect them into each other, and they smash into each other, and we look for the particles. And I call this forced physics. You know, how many billion electrons, in my days at the University of Michigan, we talked about MeV, million electron volts, to make something happen, meaning we get a strike, we'd create a particle like a deuteron. We'd launch that puppy out in a cyclotron or a bevatron. We'd spin it around in a couple of things called Ds with magnets. We'd smash some thing like calcium. We'd have what's called a Wilson cloud chamber there, and we'd look at the little specks of energy that flew off. These are called particle tracks. And that's how we were to determine, what these particles were. Today, they have bigger machines that smash harder. Technology hasn't changed a lot. And in the Hadron Collider, they have a six-story tall, check this out, six-story tall building that's a Wilson cloud chamber, basically, to measure, measure particles. But what are they looking for? Well, one of the things they're looking for is the Higgs boson. Now you might say, what is a Higgs boson? Well, let me tell you about a particle. Science believes that a Higgs boson gives things mass. Okay, now think about this. Gives something mass. Okay? If we look at a proton, it's 1,645 times heavier than an electron. Now, why is it heavier? What makes it heavier? Well, obviously, it has something to do with its specific gravity. Where does that come from? Well, science thinks they have now named it the Higgs boson. By the way, in my new book, this will be very simplified for you people that don't understand what I'm saying now, but this is a little bit deeper. Inside the Higgs boson, okay, is mass. But what is mass? Well, what I have learned about mass from the Pleiadians is this. First of all, mind is a slayer of the real, and energy follows thought. So, now think about that. E equals mc squared, right? Energy equals mass times the velocity of the speed of light squares, okay? How fast do you think? Do you think in lightning speed? Or do you think like, you know, you're so full of drugs and meat and stuff that you're thinking very slow speed? Bottom line is you think. That thought goes into an energy field. And for the sake of science, energy cannot be created. Energy cannot be destroyed. But energy can be transmuted. So the mind is the player of the real, which pushes the cosmologists clear out on the left field with their math. Because believe me, going into a mind entry, a mind solution with energy into the boson, it actually falls into the quantum mechanic field on a spiritual level and a science level. Then it breaks up. Why? Because if you look at some of the work that's been done by some of the famous scientists, one of the great works was done is that in order to walk across the room in mathematics, you had to take every possible path. That means going straight across the room, walking over the ceiling, zigzagging, going into the next room, going to Europe and coming back before you cross the room. This is the way mathematics works. And when it finally came to the end, you had all these realities, all these possibilities, that only took us to cross the room. That's how mathematics and cosmology works. So, take back to E equals mc squared. When you have E equals mc squared, then what happens is it bottles down your energy. You as a living being, your energy follows thought, follows into a particle which science will finally find, and they will name it the Higgs boson, okay? Higgs field boson. It's coming. Also, years ago, I used to talk about experiments in the laboratory. And I did a lot of them. You know, I was blessed back in the late 50s, 1957, to work with Dr. Katz. He came over here on Operation Paperclip. Now, he was a theoretical physicist for the Third Reich. He had an amazing amount of discoveries, an amazing amount of discoveries. The Randolph Lab was at the University of Michigan, and I'm working there in the 50s. I'm a young guy. I'm open to science. I had a background. I did some self-studies at home. I understood the basics. I took classes at night. After in junior high, I used to go to the University of Michigan, take night classes with, you know, guys working on their PhDs. I didn't understand half of it. But after... You know, it was funny, when I'm sitting there in a class, and they're talking about bubble chambers and fusion, and I didn't understand all that. I was just a kid, but I had a feeling for it. When the class would go out, I'd go up to the professor and say, "Sir, I have these questions." And I'm this little kid, and these guys are walking out, like, you know, that was their lecture, and then the professors would sit down, and they would spend a lot of time with me, hours. I'd be out of there at midnight. My parents were wondering, like, "Where are you at? The class is out at 8. Well, I spent 4 hours with a professor getting private tutoring on what a bubble chamber was, what an expansion was, what, you know, fusion was. What is it? And the guys would always explain it to me in very simple terms. They didn't give me all these huge mathematical formulas, which I couldn't comprehend, you know, comprende, because, you know, Einstein even failed math when he was 17. But I did get the basic feeling. And from that, when I finally met Semyasi from the Pleiades, I really had a gut understanding of what she was talking about. She talked over my head for 5 years because I was like, you know, physical, trying to be physical, but that never worked. That was just the ego. So this is the kind of stuff that, you know, that I had in my upbringing. And so now I'm looking at cosmology as a whole and realizing they don't understand consciousness. And the way I really began to understand physics was long after Dr. Katz at the University of Michigan and him, you know, working for the Third Reich and coming over here on a pardon and being part of the Randolph Lab. Long after that, I began to realize that there's more to this than just physics. Then I ended up, you know, I spent 20 years working on top secret projects, you know, instrumentation, things that I did. It's on the BBS radio website if you want to see what I did. So I worked on all these projects for 20 years. And then what happened was I realized where the nation was with physics. I got to see nuclear physics, particle physics, all kinds of, you know, mechanical things that I'd learned about, stress, you know, machines that went on the airplane wings, to the stress analysts, you know, sensors, all this stuff. I learned it all. Well, I didn't learn it all perfectly, but I knew what it was. You know, like learning about metal fatigue on an aluminum wing of a jet plane, for example, was fascinating. It took me a year to learn that because I put the instrumentations out for the transducers that were on these wings on these planes. Actually, a company I worked for made the transducers. So I got to see stress analysis, atomic fatigue, and I saw how atomic structures would fade with age, with flexibility, and how shock worked. And then I also saw, you know, cars. I got into cars for a long time. And I started seeing how certain cars, same car, two owners. One owner just beat the heck out of the car and didn't care for it. Another owner took primo care of the car, and somehow or other, the primo car with the love put into it lasted a lot longer. Even though the guy's beating it up, it didn't really matter. I saw the love in the energy. And I began to realize that energy does follow thought. And so, therefore, going back to the Big Bang, it's like, where would you go with a Big Bang? Well, to me, where I went was not out in the universe, because the universe is inside of me. I am the universe, and you are the universe as a listener, as a being. So I went into the most logical place was the brain, and I began to study synapses. I began to study, you know, receptors, effectors, and I named a product of mine called the receptor off of the, you know, that part of the brain, which is switch. I learned about protein. I learned about DNA. I learned how DNA eventually went through minerals, enzymes, protein, peptides, polypeptides, and finally became a hormone. At the hormone level, it possessed consciousness. I learned that chain. It was not that complicated. Consciousness. Okay, so by going up different protein ladders, I could produce a protein that would make me go after a woman or a woman go after me or whatever. I could produce a hormone that had energy in the solar plexus. That was cool. I could produce, you know, I learned about how energy produced the pineal gland and the pituitary gland, which is a tropic hormone center. And through that, I was able to work with women giving birth and get rid of birth pains because I figured out how what caused pain, you know, in women giving birth, which was not necessary. It was misinformation. So I got in touch with the information channels of how the human body works. Then I started to compare it with the Big Bang. I looked at what the yogi mystics could do. I remember when Sai Baba came here, back from India, from his ashram, came over here, walked through my living room, in front of witnesses, walked through my bedroom and disappeared and went back. And I also remember that one of his financial supporters came over here one time from Hollywood, who had a receipt and some film where they had been taking pictures of him over in India at his ashram. They had run out of film. He had said, just a moment, I'll go get you the film. He went into his tent. A few minutes later, he came out with the film. In the film was a receipt. The friends of mine got the receipt, which I actually have in my possession, went to, after they got back from India, they went to the Hollywood, to the shop that was on the receipt, and asked if they remembered a strange-looking guy buying this film. And they said, yes, the guy came in with an orange suit. He purchased the film, And he went out the door. We never saw him again. And my connection with him, Sai Baba, began with a guy named Joe Randazzo, who was doing a video series on him and myself years ago. We became friends. And then Sai Baba decided to visit my house here and hang out in the vortex, which he did. When I look at the quantum, the cosmological, you know, explanation of how, for example, you'd walk into a wall, and as you walk into this wall, which is your universe, you're coming out the wall behind you. And I look at all these silly explanations and realize they didn't understand consciousness. And as long as man is learning in the human brain, as long as man is moving forward in discovery, as long as man is moving forward in discovery and helping other men, the universe will sustain itself. And all of the power of hydrogen converting to helium, you know, our sun is 25% helium, 75% hydrogen. It's a G4 star. It's about 4.5 billion years old. It's got another 4.5 billion years to live. That seems like a long time, but if you look at how time is, you know, when's the last time you heard Dr. Fred? I mean, it's like yesterday was last month. And you hear me saying, oh, it's July, it's August, you know, it's December, it's January. The time is going very fast now. Okay, when you look at cosmology, how does cosmology describe this? Well, the way they describe it is the universe is expanding at an accelerated rate, meaning that, you know, once the Big Bang occurred and made a first radio frequency measurement 380,000 years and got an establishment of that, well, they got some mechanical, predictions of how it was going. They realize it's accelerating. So now that they want to say as well, if it accelerates too far and too fast, it's going to get cold. Everybody's going to freeze to death. Or it's going to reverse on itself and it's going to compress. We're going to burn to death. Because all cosmology wants to do is put a nature of their ignorance and project it into their formulas. It's so sad. It is so sad. And as you know, I've been trying to get Michio Kaku on my show. I've sent him many emails. He doesn't respond. That's okay. I'm done with him. He's wrote some fascinating books. I've read two of them. I bet he's never read anything I've read. Fascinating stuff. He's taken me into his head, into Einstein's head. It's a great. I recommend his books. One of them is called Hyperspace, and the other one is called Parallel Worlds. But where I want to take you now is to where he started. Okay. He wants to have a partial claim to the string theory. And we'll get into the string theory in a minute. But if you really want to get, you know, smart on the string theory, you need to get a book called ESP of Quarks and Super Strings by Stephen M. Phillips. ESP of Quarks and Super Strings by Stephen M. Phillips, who I'll have on the show. He'll come on my show. That's not a problem. I mean, I'm not desperate to get anybody on the show. When you get into that, when you start looking at what Stephen Phillips wrote, you'll start to see what I wrote about in the Rays of Truth on my little presentation of the unified field theory, whereby in a black hole, you know, first of all, you know, people say, what's a black hole? Well, our universe, you know, we rotate around the Pleiades every 26,827.5 years. Our entire galaxy, called the precession of the equinox, our entire galaxy rotates around a black hole because there's always a black hole out there. Now, why does a galaxy, ask yourself, why would any galaxy rotate around a black hole? Think about that. Think about this. Energy follows thought. Okay? Why does our galaxy, with many inhabited planets, rotate around a black hole? Okay. Now, what is a black hole? Well, a black hole to me is a previous thought form that was forgotten. Okay. A previous thought form that was forgotten. In the mind of God, and what's the mind of God? It's your mind. Your mind. You just have to open up your attention span. How would you do that? Face the hologram. Learn the imprint of the hologram, expand from the hologram, and move out from there. That's the way I did it. I don't know if it's working for me or not, but it puts me out in a place where I feel comfortable with my thoughts. Okay, so therefore, a black hole is a forgotten thought. Now, from who? Whose mind? Everybody wants to say the Creator. But what about putting the Creator in all of us? What about putting creation in our thoughts? Why externalize it to something else? And then think about it, if you're God, are you going to externalize your thoughts into everything that you create? Or are you going to be part of everything you create? Enjoy that part of you that's severed from the whole, and enjoy the whole as it grows back to the oneness, to the omnipresent, omnipotent Creator. And so therefore, it's okay to have particles. Well, they're guidelines, because we're going to create religion, we're going to create science, we're going to create politics to differentiate between the two, we're going to create world governments to differentiate all of that, and we're going to create civilizations to interface with one another. 5 points, number of man. Very simple. It's not that complicated, at least not to me. So, therefore, what is a black hole? A black hole is a collapsing something, thought. Now, if we think, if what science is telling us in our own quantum mechanics, in our Planck constants, their own formulas of energy, which are huge, huge amounts of energy and something smaller than you can imagine. That's where they're at with their math. Huge amounts of energy in areas smaller than you can imagine. Okay, that's where all of physics comes from. You know, the Big Bang. What happened in the first microsecond, the first millisecond, the first billionth of a second. So they have to go to the creation of a thought. But that's okay. Because obviously, the first thought was a star. And that star had to collapse at some point after the Big Bang. You know, when the Big Bang went off, if you believe in the Big Bang, I believe it was a big thought form that went out, that created stars. And they created it for a long time, but pretty soon, consciousness started ganging up on those stars, and it was probably attracted. You know, fire loves fire. You know, if you study the Tibetan mysticism, you learn about fire, Agni, the fire god. You learn about all the different gods of energy. Well, just consider them thought forms, you know. And look at what the Pleiadians brought here. They brought here the Dorji. The Dorji is a tool that shows that we have 8 parallel universes, you know. And beyond that, we have an infinite number of dimensions. It's old science. Not 20, not 10 million, just a few. But the dimensional analysis of that is beyond imagination. Well, not really, but for some. So, with that in mind, a star starts to cool off. You know, well, you take a star that's, let's say, you know, like our sun, you know, a million miles across, you condense it down the size of a football. Okay? Now, gravity, you know, it's part of that. You know, mutual attraction or love, gravity is basically love, but science wants to put gravitons as a particle which they've never seen, but we call it love. It condenses down into itself with such a healing force that as it condenses down and cools off, as our sun will, it creates what's called an event horizon. Across the event horizon comes light, light from another star, Betelgeuse, which is another big star about to blow up, coming to Earth. And the light jumps, you know, it bends in this event horizon. It doesn't come straight to Earth, it's actually warped. It changes its direction and then recorrects itself once it gets out of the event horizon field. When this happens, we observe Einstein's theory of relativity. That's what it's all about. You know, which is cool. It's a relative. You know, there's the event horizon. The event horizon is a family of energy, and the star is collapsing. Finally, that star gets down to about the size of a football. Okay, now you got a lot of gravity working there. Now you've got a heck of a lot of gravity when that gets down to the size of a football. Okay, so now the star ceases to exist. You know, on the way down, if the chemicals aren't right, it can blow up. It becomes a supernova. Can really blow up and become a quasar, but most of them become a black hole, like the center of our universe. That would be a big thought. A big thought. You know, to create such a thing, our whole galaxy, you know, not the universe, but our galaxy, Milky Way, rotates around that. It had to be a great idea, which all of us are a part of, all of us. Because why would we have this if we weren't a part of it? Do you think the universe would want to create itself without having something play with it, to tickle it, to make it explosive, to make it hot, to make it cold, to create gradients, to create worlds, imagination, reality? You know, how many planets are just exactly positioned within a few degrees of where they are from the sun as ours is in the right distance to create, you know, within a few degrees of temperature, a perfect life that we have here, which we're trying to screw up with a greenhouse effect. So with that in mind, you know, you begin to understand cosmology as it should be understood. Now, next thing that happens is, here we are out on the Milky Way. We're way out from the center. You know, we're rotating around the Pleiades, and we're all thinking. We're all having experiences. This is called Akashic Records. Akasha. How is Akashic Records? Well, it works in math. You know, it works in Einstein's formulas, actually, in the fact that if you look at the crystal kingdom, which is silicon dioxide, crystals, if you take them out of the ground, grow at the rate of 0.01%, tenth of a percent every 10 years in mass, because of the Akashic Records. So if a piece of silicon dioxide is sensitive enough to pick up on this energy, if it's sensitive enough to pick up on this energy, then why would not the black hole that our galaxy rotates around not pick up on it simultaneously? And why has quantum physics recently in the laboratory, once in place over in Sweden has been done, play around with the rotation of a couple of electrons around the nucleus of an atom and gotten demonstrable results from 1 meter, 2 meter, 5 meters, 10 miles, blah, blah, blah. Demonstrable results. And they now call it in physics the science of teleportation. Hello, what is wrong with this picture? Nothing. It's exactly what we're talking about. Exactly what's been predicted. Exactly the technology that's been given to us from the Andromedans with the projector technology. But now we're taking it to another level. You know, people sit down and they program this thing, the projector. And they wonder why things happen. And they wonder why things happen they didn't expect to happen. And they wonder why there's side effects that they weren't expecting. And this happens a lot. Because everything is a hologram. When you get out there to the black hole, when you look at the black hole, it collapses. It sucks in matter. If something comes in through the shield of the event horizon, which is basically bending light, it comes through that. It's sucked into the black hole. And where does it go? Well, that's not complicated. Someday, cosmology will wake up and study medicine. When the medical gap is bridged in cosmology, when it is bridged, there will be a connection to the energy going into a black hole, E equals mc squared. Energy cannot be created or destroyed. It's moved around. Old laws of Newtonian physics, old stuff, but it's proven to be. It's beautiful. Stephen Hawking's done a brilliant job on it. He just gets screwed up on time travel. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But the bottom line is, let's look at DNA. Now, if it's our brain that just exploded with a new thought and created a quasar or a black hole or a star that evaporated into a black hole over a couple of billion years, if that came out of our heads, right, then what does it take to make our heads function? It takes form. Physical form. The physical form created by DNA, two alpha, two beta chains, you know, four amino acids, they combine in many strands. Once the DNA is formed, then what happens is the intelligence of that DNA guides protein into a form, a human form with brain and heart. Actually, a human being is more complicated than a star. Way more complicated if you look at the chemistry. A star is just a bunch of heat, you know, creating nuclear fusion, which is a few simple stellar mechanics and some Tazar, you know, equations that explains how hydrogen, you know, helium is fused into hydrogen, and helium gets used up, and boom, actually, the hydrogen is created, and more helium comes, and pretty soon the star burns out. It takes a while. Human beings are a lot more complex than that, because the sun doesn't think. Okay, the sun does not think, not at all, not one thought. But we think, and I've talked about this before, about aligning the planets. When we have a Jupiter effect, how we get huge solar flares. And if you're watching the Sci-Fi Channel this weekend, which I'm going to be watching after the show and watch before, it's all about solar flares. The whole weekend is about solar flares. And if you look at them, they're on the increase, they're getting bigger, and I have said many times that if you take the energy of all the planets, you know, the etheric energy is a tensor field. It's calculable in quantum mechanics, the tensor field. If you take that etheric energy and line all the planets up, the Earth is out of sync. Why? Because this tensor field is screwed up. Why? Because energy follows thought, and we have more people thinking negative here in this world than we do positive. So it actually gets into the tensor equation. You know, I'm not going to go into all that stuff because I'll have that in my new book. It'll be over on the raysoftruth.tv website, those kinds of equations. I will have them there. I have some of the best physicists in the world. I'm going to put some equations up for you guys that want them. That's not what we're talking about right now. So what we are talking about is the fact that the sun, you know, a dying star, a black hole is a star that died, compresses its gravity down to the size of a football, and everything is being sucked in the consciousness. Okay, consciousness is not affected by gravity. Consciousness is not affected by gravity. This is a stumbling block for the cosmology field. They're right on it. There are scientists now that are trying to bring consciousness into this equation, but they can't get it through the human body. They don't want to take responsibility for their own actions. Scientists don't want that. They want to equate, you know, analyze, and not take responsibility. And that's where you get into the emotional energies, the corticosteroids in the body, and that's where you get into the feeling. Okay? It's equation. The equation is equating. So what happens is, from what I've learned, is when energy from this black hole, this huge, think about this. It takes, you know how much energy it takes to blow up an atomic bomb? Not much. You know, when you look at, you start looking at the energy in an equation and look at the atomic bomb, it's just a few atoms getting, you know, converting into pure energy. So now what happens is when you get into the black hole, that energy's got to go somewhere. Well, where would it go? Okay, where, you know, if a black hole is sucking in light and sucking in planets and asteroids and everything else, where are they going? Well, first of all, in quantum mechanics, we have a factor that says we're accelerating towards the speed of light, so we're going into pre-energy. Okay, I'll buy that, because inside a black hole, we're accelerating up to the speed of light, okay, even though it's black. So now what happens is, well, science would like to say at the speed of light, it separates matter and matter from antimatter. So, okay, fine, we'll buy that. It's antimatter. Now, what's antimatter? Dark energy. Antimatter is a transmission force that goes between, you know, here's an example of antimatter. Let me give you an example. Take a piece of paper that's 9 inches long and draw a point on it. Top, put a dot at the bottom. At the top, put a dot. Okay? Draw a line across that paper from the top dot to the bottom dot. Okay? Now, pretend that your energy has to follow from the bottom dot down your little line to the top of your piece of paper. Now what I want you to do is just take that piece of paper and take the top dot and the bottom dot and stick them together. Now there is no path. It's instantaneous. The transition between the top dot and the bottom dot, there has to be a transition, okay? In other words, first we have this piece of paper laid out, and we have a bottom dot, we have a top dot. The bottom dot, we got energy going. Oh, it takes 5 minutes to get that little line over the top dot, but it got there. We'll call that the speed of light, okay? Now we do it again. We draw another line from the bottom dot of the piece of 8.5 by 11 paper, you know, 9 inches long, to the top dot. We're drawing this line, okay? Energy follows thought. Energy is following a speed. That's the speed of light. That's how quick it gets there. Now what we do is we take the top dot and the top dot and the bottom dot. We fold the paper in half, put the two dots together. Okay? Now we call that the energy transition time. Okay? So we got the two dots pressed together, top and the bottom of the piece of paper. Okay? What is going on between the pressing? Why, when we took the top dot and the bottom dot and they connected and we transmitted ourselves or our spaceship through there, what was the medium that made that happen? It wasn't just taking two pieces of paper and sticking them together. There was a medium here. That's called dark energy, okay? Dark matter. Whatever it was to make those two things connect in instantaneous versus the whole sheet of paper, called dark matter, dark energy. And that is, you know, you ever heard the term spacing out? You get this idea and you want to kick back on it and you want to make it happen again and you space out. Same thing. Dark matter, dark energy. It's what I call the cosmic pause. It's the point of, you know, when an electron goes around a proton, it doesn't just go around it. It stops, spins, depending on if that electron and proton are being accelerated in a linear accelerator. Then that electron is going to stop, and it's going to spin into, you know, three sets of quarks, which are going to go into hadrons, which are going to go into leptons, which are going to go into baryons, and all the way down the line. They're going to break apart. And then they're all going to reconnect, and they're going to move another quantum measurement, a small amount, and they're going to do that again. And depending how they do that, and how many times they break down, and how many times they split up, determines that what energy that is. And then the period, the orbital period, W orbital, P orbital, they all follow a path. So we start getting into physics now. It's a lot more fun. It's a lot different than it used to be. And I hope you guys are following me. I'm trying not to be complicated. I'm not even looking at the computer tonight because I wanted to get this point across. It's in my new book, Raise, you know, Inside Track. This is going to be in there. Now, when I put this in the new book, there's only going to be, you know, for lay people, the first few chapters. I mean, the first, say, chapter one goes so far, it goes into, say, 20 pages. Then there are 20 more pages that the intellectual person might want to have. And that 20 pages is going to be on the raiseoftruth.tv and probably a couple other websites that I'll set up for it. Because I can't get to the American public on a general level with this complicated stuff we're talking tonight. But I can entice them to at least explore. Because American people need to wake up into their own consciousness, into their own realities, and realize that they're creating them. It's very important. So we're having a lot of fun. I'm having a lot of fun explaining this stuff to you. It's been a while. I've been wanting to have this little comment on cosmology for a while, but I just haven't had time to sit down and focus on what I want to say tonight. But we've got more to say. So now we're looking at the black hole. The black hole is now collapsing. Okay. At the same time the black hole is collapsing, sucking energy in, we're looking at DNA. Okay, DNA has formed into cells, okay? It replicates itself rather rapidly, and cells reproduce at the rate of 50 to 90 million cells per second. Now, the cell replication frequency, the phenomenon of it, takes place occasionally. It's called, you know, splitting of the cells just doesn't occur like, automatically. It takes a while for a cell to split. Before a cell can split, it has to bring up the amount of chromosomes, you know, the base pairs. The human body has 46 base pairs and 46 chromosomes in the human being when it's first born. By the time you're 50 years old, you have 6 base pairs, but you still have to have the 46 base pairs per turn to create what's called the splitting process or mitosis. Now, when does this occur? You ever heard the expression pulsar, pulsing? Okay. Pulsar. When science looks out into space in cosmology, we see these pulsing electromagnetic stars. And if you go to NASA TV, or actually it's, what is that one I use most of the time? Astronomy Picture of the Day from NASA. You can look it up on the internet. You'll see about pulsars. When an energy pulses from a star, from a black hole, it then pulses. It kicks up the DNA in the human body. Depending on the resonant structure of that human, meaning that A lot of people wake up and they say, oh, I'm from Andromeda, or I'm a Pleiadian, or I'm a Sirian, or I'm from a, you know. They people have a tendency in their intuition to say that I believe I'm from Sirius, I'm from somewhere. Okay, that's what people think. Why do they do that? Why do people think that they're from Sirius, you know, the Blue Ray Path, or Orion, or somewhere? Why do people do that? Why? Because they read too many Robert A. Heinlein books or other sci-fi books? No. Intuition is something beyond this galaxy, this universe's creation. Intuitively, they know that their DNA vibratory rate has something to do with synchronicity from a particular star where it's probably near a black hole. They don't know why, but energy follows thought. Einstein's own equation, E equals MC squared. And when you start squaring light from here to Orion in your brain, that's a lot of energy, and that's going to cause you, it's going to cause your synapses to come up and have those intuitive feelings. What the heck do you think intuition is anyway? It's nothing more than some ray of truth that's coming into your body. And don't let the outside world influence you in any way, shape, or form about your own intuition. Because your intuition is your reality. It's your right to be who you are. It's your right to be a star out there, many stars. It's your right to be a galaxy someday. And when you take your consciousness and you fuse it into that consciousness of what your God-given rights are as a human being, guess what's going to happen to your power on this physical plane? So many people are so engrossed now in what goes on in this physical world, they've lost their cosmic ability to think and feel. Listeners of Dr. Fred Bell, trust me, you need to get in touch with your own inner feelings. Because when your DNA starts to replicate into cellular mitosis, it pulls down its energy. The energy is sucked out of that black hole. It forms those 46 base pairs per turn, and it forms those 46 chromosomes and allows your body to reproduce itself. And when you get in touch with that, you can live a lot longer. You won't be influenced by the ignorance of this planet, which is ridiculous. You won't be, you know, influenced by fossil fuel companies. You won't be influenced by technologies of the medical pharma, big pharma. That won't affect you anymore because you'll be on it. Rise out of this ignorant local thought form and move into a higher consciousness of who you are and what you are and understand who and what you are. And you'll be a better person behind it. You'll have a better family behind it. You'll sleep better at night. You're just going to be better all around when you start to understand the real principles of cosmology. And the big disappointment that I had trying to reach Michio Kaku is I sent him many emails. It's mkaku.com or whatever. Look it up on the internet. He didn't respond. He probably won't. He may. I don't care at this point. I'm done with him. I think, taking credit for Stephen Phillips' work and Annie Besant and not reflecting in any of his books kind of sucks. And I'm absolutely, I have a lot of friends that are cosmologists I can bring on this show. But I'd like to get, this guy's been on Larry King and a bunch of other stuff. Well, so have I. I've been on Larry King, been on a lot of big shows. It's not about who you are as a presenter. It's who you are as a person. And I really feel that this guy, Michio Kaku, would be great on this show. Don't know if he's coming on or not. Probably after this show, he doesn't want anything to do with me. But that's his problem, Bottom line is we can do this on our own. I really appreciate the fun that we had tonight. I really do. It just doesn't get any better than tonight's show. You can email me at drfredbell@pyridine.com. You know where I'm at. I hope this helps you. The projector system that we developed at Pyridine, which, by the way, is getting patented now. I'm getting a patent on it. Works within this technology of cosmology that we talked about. I didn't talk about the projector versus what my dissertation was tonight because I didn't want it to sound like a commercial. I wanted you to actually hear, from my heart what I do and where I'm coming from with all of this stuff. So with that, I guess we're at 7:55. we're coming up to the end of the show. I appreciate you guys being here. Keep up the good work. Talk to you soon.